She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. It is indeed Mrs. Green, and you are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. I always want to repeat the part of what our tagline is. We don't want to tell you what to think. We just want you to. And there's so much I'm going to give you to think about today for our great guests that you'll be just in think overload, I'm pretty sure. The show today is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, which is so fitting since tomorrow is Earth Day. And they do so much to eliminate filling our landfills with waste. They do just about as much as anybody I know. So thank you to the Fairfax Companies for all your support of Mrs. Green's World. We have a 5-star lineup of guests today, and I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. Action-packed, content-rich, our buddy and supporter of the planet, Mr. Terry D. himself from Habitat for Humanity. Terry, I haven't used the bell in a long time, but you're a bell ringer.
And,
yeah, I know. I like to ring the bell because the show needs to sound peppy. And we're also going to be interviewing Franklin Russell, who's the director of Earth Day Network. And in studio with me is Tana Kappel from the Nature Conservancy. So does it sound like an action-packed show and that we'll have lots to think about?
I'm telling you.
All righty then. So why don't you start, and then I'll do a little shout out about people to follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Mrs. Green's World so they can stay connected to people like you. What's going on?
Yesterday I was at Pima College in Tucson, Arizona, and a couple booths over from me was the Nature Conservancy.
Awesome.
So I feel like we're related.
It is. It was all meant to be here. Yes.
And I bet they'll even have a booth tomorrow at the Tucson's Earth Day Festival, I bet.
Right. They will. Yeah. I don't know. It's at the University of Arizona. There's so much going on. And I should say, so people don't get confused, this is a pre-recorded show because everybody's going to be doing things on Earth Day. So we're talking about, it is the day before Earth Day when it is aired. So let me be very clear about that. So what did you do yesterday, and what are you doing tomorrow, and what are you doing Saturday?
You know, April's a very busy month for the Habit Store. We've already been at a couple of Earth events during the month. We just really are happy to be able to divert as much stuff as we do from the landfill in order to build more habitat houses. So it's been a great month for us so far, and we're looking forward to the rest of the month as well.
So when you go out to these festivals, because we were at Green Fest, we're going to be at the Main Gate Square, you're going to be at Reed Park, and I think I'm going to be there as a guest. What is your purpose? Is it just getting the word out? Do you bring some rare finds to the booth so that people know the treasures they can find at the Habit Store?
We do bring a couple. You know, our real main goal is just to let people know that when their donation comes to the Habit Store, there's a lot of things that can happen to it. You know, it gets resold, gets repurposed, gets reused, and it also earns money to build more habitat houses in Tucson, change families' lives, change people's lives.
And I love the whole concept of a hand up, not a handout, because you make families. I can't imagine that people don't know this because Habitat for Humanity is so internationally known, but families actually participate in helping to build, in the whole beginning to end of being a part of getting a house. You don't just give them a house.
You know, the sweat equity part of the house is what really bonds the homeowner with the community and with their other neighbors. You know, in Tucson, we build a lot of houses that are all on the same street. So when the homeowners are going to their classes to learn how to be a homeowner and to learn how to be successful and do budgeting and be good neighbors, they're already doing that every month with the people they're going to live next door to. So it's why our success rate is so low. It's because, you know, we really try to teach our homeowners not to fail.
Okay, did you say your success rate is so low? That's not what you meant. Your failure rate is so low.
Our failure rate is so low, yes.
Get a grip there, buddy.
Right. We are so successful that it's unbelievable.
It is. It's minuscule. I mean, people that turn the homes back. And then the other thing is, I think we should tell people what kinds of treasures. You know me, when I get down there, I start calling friends and saying, can you believe this? You even have a fine furniture section now. There are finds for your home and for your business and for your kitchens and your yard.
Well, so there's lots of stories to tell. I went to a gal's house yesterday after the Pima College event. And she called me up and she was trying to explain to me what she had. And she was saying they were cement and they were pillars. And I just couldn't grasp what she was saying. So I went to her house afterwards over by the northwest or northeast side. And exactly what she had, she had built a little wall around her backyard that was, you know, 4 foot high with cement on the bottom, cement on the top. And then these turned pillars made out of cement. And she overordered. She has about 50 of them left. I guess they changed the design after they had purchased it. But those will be in the Habit Store next week.
And people love that. They love it.
Oh, these will be great. Someone's really going to be able to make a great addition to their backyard with these things.
What a find. And at a fraction of the price and then not going to landfill. It's the closed loop. So how can people find you? How can people donate and support the Habitat for Humanity's Habit Store? I know Facebook is one way. What else?
Right. Now, I'll take a picture and put those on Facebook. You know, our phone number is 520-889-7200. If you want to have a pickup in Tucson, give us a call and we'll schedule that. The website is habitattucson.org. So that's a good way to find us as well. Look on Facebook, look on Twitter. Right now, also, we have some great security screen doors. So summertime is here. You want to put that door up. They're wrought iron, three different colors, and those are priced to go. At $75. So
that's awesome.
Come in and take a look at those.
Okay, I should probably Facebook and retweet that. So, and there are Habitat for Humanity Habit Stores all over the country. So if you're listening from New Jersey, trust me, there's a Habitat for Humanity Habit Store near you. Just Google it. Ter, I'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay. Thanks.
Make it a great green day. Thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, that was Terry D, and you can obviously tell that we love having him on the show. Isn't he? I mean, Tana, isn't he great? He's just great, and he's very passionate about what he does. He gets as excited as I do, and he's become my friend since the starting of Mrs. Green's World. I knew him. He used to work for Home Depot, and then our paths cross frequently. So in studio with us, if you just joined us, Tana Kappel from the Nature Conservancy. She's going to be giving us not a lot just to think about, but to be able to do within the next 24 hours to get a Guinness Book of World Records. So I'm excited about that. And then we are calling right now, and hopefully we will connect with Franklin Russell, who's the director of Earth Day. And it's got a colon. It's hard when it's not on the flashing on the TV screen, Earth Day Network. And they're doing things on such a global scale. And we're going to, he said he can spare 15 or 20 minutes. So we're going to ask about that. So we're making this think globally, act locally. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So thanks for your patience and for being with us. And I think we've got Franklin live. So that's a good thing. Franklin, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on the show. Your unbelievable website and what you're doing. And of course, I'm Mrs. Green, so I know all about what you're doing. I'm not going to act like I just discovered this for the first time. So I know your time is precious. And why don't we start? I already announced that you're the director of Earth Day. You have a lot of things going on this month, just saying that tongue in cheek. Why don't you just give everybody the history of Earth Day?
Sure. So 42 years ago, to date, the first Earth Day actually came into being. The idea was generated from a young Wisconsin senator at the time, Senator Gaylord Nelson, was frustrated by all the pollution he saw and the environmental degradation around his community and wanted to fix it. So he worked with a couple of organizers, one of them being the young Dennis Hayes at the time, to organize what he thought would be a national teach-in and a rally in a couple of cities around the country at first. However, the movement blossomed, and on April 22nd, the first Earth Day, more than 20 million Americans came out and voiced their concerns for the planet, and shortly thereafter, the energy that they created really built the environmental movement and caused the government to create the EPA and pass the Clean Air and Clean Water Act.
No.
So essentially, the movement was begun on Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970.
I have to tell you that this week I've been struggling at a very real level about some of the bad news in the world today with fracking and, you know, maybe the reintroduction of Agent Orange as a pesticide with our friends Monsanto. So hearing your story, it inspires me to continue on in my important work as Mrs. Green. So what do you have planned that's wonderful for the planet this Earth Day in Washington, D.C. on Sunday?
Questions. We actually have the flagship Earth Day event taking place here on Sunday in D.C. on the National Mall, and it's going to run from 12 to 7 p.m. It'll feature prominent celebrities, musicians, government officials, really a lot of folks from the environmental community will be there, hoping to have tens of thousands of people come out. The weather right now looks like it could be a little bit balmy, but we're hoping that will change. It should be really a terrific event. The headlining band is Cheap Trick. We'll also have the DC there. We'll have a couple of other big names for kids. We'll have Kicking Daisies, which should be stopping by. We'll have EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson. So it should be really a terrific event. It'll be streamed live all around the world, and it will be a really great Earth Day celebration.
I wish I could be there, and maybe my friends in Tucson, because I've got stuff Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and Monday, but it would be great to be a part of a huge celebration like this. So maybe Mrs. Green will be one of the participants next year. It's just such a good vibrational thing to happen for the planet. So with the big, vast array of choices that people have, do you have top of mind three things that individuals can do for the Earth? I say frequently on my show, every day is Earth Day. Why do we have to have an Earth Day? I'm glad we're celebrating it like Mother's Day. But every day, if we could just get to the point in our consciousness that every day is Earth Day, that would be great for the planet Earth. What do you, if C say, oh, Franklin, what three things do you think I should do for the Earth?
Good question. Well, I think really there are two things that you should really try to do this Earth Day. One is find an Earth Day activity or event near you. If you go to www.earthday.org, you can find Earth Day events that are happening in your community. Strongly encourage everyone to attend an event. And second of all, encourage everyone to make an Earth Day resolution. We call them formally acts of green. We encourage people to pledge an act of green. Now, that act of green can be anything to help reduce an individual's carbon footprint or educate others about the environment. So maybe it might be walking to work, maybe it might be biking to work, washing your laundry in cold water, starting to recycle, unplugging unused appliances, all these little things in our day-to-day lives that really have an impact on our lives and we're not even aware of in our carbon footprint. We're encouraging folks to do one or two things for Earth Day, make that resolution, and begin to do it now. And if we all do it, will have a monumental impact on the planet's carbon footprint.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to date, we've actually collected more than 977 million acts of green for people all over the world. And our goal is to try to get to a billion acts of green by Earth Day.
And what I put on Facebook this morning is, because I was doing my updated research, is you actually have 980,877,770. So we need to get, with the promotion of this show, we have a very active Facebook and Twitter following. Tana is here from the Nature Conservancy. We'll do our part. I signed the pledge, and the challenge for me was picking one thing, because I actually do a lot of them. But you can sign the pledge, and to me, feel a part of something way bigger than ourselves. It's small steps, big impact. Okay, so that's two. What's your third one? Do you have a three?
Third one, yeah. Third one is talk with your neighbors. Talk with your friends and families. Let them know your concerns for the environment. Share your thoughts. And together, we need to come together and mobilize the Earth, which is the official theme of Earth Day 2012. And call upon world leaders to embrace a sustainable future.
So the perfect segue is, relative to my mood this week, what's happening around the world? Do you live in a place of hope, possibility, and change, which is where I like to live? Or are some of the things seeming a bit daunting to you these days? I admit I feel a little daunted, and I haven't for quite some time. But, man, the news out there, you know, with the fracking, the president's going to put it off for two more years to impose the standards. And you know, Agent Orange, I woke up that day, I got about six emails, and I went, really? Agent Orange? Does anybody remember what that did? And it's an iteration of that. So give me some really good news and what's happening around the Earth and why you're so excited.
Well, there's no doubt that over the past couple of years that environmental issues have taken a backseat. But just looking around the world, what people are planning to do for Earth Day, it's really inspiring. We're getting events in every country around the world, and we expect about 1 billion people to come out for Earth Day in some shape or form to be engaged in some kind of activity. And even in just a couple of the stories I've got, you know, we've got in Iraq, we've worked with the Ministry of Education to send letters, Earth Day materials, to every single school in the country, and kids everywhere will be working on speeches for Earth Day and sharing them with their classmates. In Seoul, South Korea, a group called EcoMom is organizing Earth Day activities throughout the day, which feature a series of documentaries about Earth Day, and together they are trying to register 1,000 acts of green. In Des Moines, Iowa, they're having an Earth Day trash bash where they're going to have hopefully 1,000 volunteers come out, and they're hoping to collect more than 5,000 pounds of litter, tires, and recyclables. And it's really just amazing when you look all over the world. In Cairo, Egypt, they're doing something. In Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in Estonia, in really every country around the world, 192 countries, we are seeing these amazing Earth Day events. And it's really uplifting, because if we can unite these voices together, I think we can really influence change.
That inspires me. And I do say that frequently on my show, in my blogging, in my Facebooking, that don't ever think that you can't make a difference. Sometimes there's a call to collect signatures to stop a piece of legislation, and 1 million signatures are collected in about 72 hours. So don't think your vote or your signing the petition or your signature doesn't matter. I believe our voices are being heard. Everybody's entitled to an off week. I'm back on now. It's like I said, man, this is, let's keep going and raise, pump up the volume for the planet Earth. So that's exciting. And will all of these events, are you going to be able to see a lot of them on your website once,
yeah,
you know, after people start sending them in? Because it's for anybody who wants to know, it's earthday.org. It's not very hard to find the website. And it's funny, I pulled it up this morning, and I don't know if it's because how you do it, but the U of A Earth Day that I'm going to be a part of tomorrow is one of the first things that comes up. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I didn't even put in my zip code.
Oh, terrific. Well, the events toolbar is actually, it's based on your IP address, so it's a geolocator toolbar.
It's so smart.
It will pull up events in your area. Yeah, it's pretty nifty.
It is pretty nifty, so it doesn't take much, and you know, we have so much when I look about it, the solar... There's a solar cookout, and there's a buzz in Tucson about Earth. It kind of crescendoed starting yesterday, so we're excited about that. Now, what is, once Earth Day is over, what do you guys do? Like, all go take 2 weeks off and sleep?
Well,
you
that's
wish,
certainly, you
right?
know, on the wish list, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so actually, there is a really important conference coming up, and, you know, one of the things I think folks need to realize is after Earth Day, there's still a lot that we can all do. So in June, this coming June, on June 20th through June 22nd, there is going to be a United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And the conference is a once-a-generation conference, and it brings together world leaders and representatives from countries everywhere to discuss sustainability and how we can move forward in the future to embrace it. And right now, we have over 100 countries that have committed elected officials and other presidential figures to come and attend the event on behalf of their country. However, several prominent countries like the U.S. have declined to send their president. So if we can build enough support, if we can get enough people talking about this Earth Summit, this Rio de Janeiro event, then we will be able to influence not only our leaders to be there, but hopefully inspire these leaders to come up with some kind of international agreement that will protect the environment.
You know, it's just so, to me, there's just such logic in that, because what good is healthcare or anything else if we're not preserving the planet? There's a logical place from which to start, if you ask me. So we are going to go to a break, and thank you for being with us this long this week because of all that's on your plate. For anybody that just tuned in, we have been speaking with Franklin Russell, who's the director of Earth Day from the earthdaynetwork.org. And let's tell people your website again. Earthday.org is correct, yes?
That's correct.
And follow them on Facebook and Twitter. That, to me, is a call to action. If you become a part of that community, then you're getting updates like I am. So I wish you well, and I wish that I had a ticket to the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit, too. It's like it's all happening. And thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's world.
Thanks for having me on the show. Happy Earth Day.
We'll be in touch. Happy Earth Day to you, too. And thanks to you and all your staff for what you do to make the world a better place. I say that from my heart. We'll be right back. Stay here with Mrs. Green's World.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
This is Mrs. Green with some great news about the Honda 2012 CR-V. It was named one of the top 10 cars with the best resale value by Kelley Blue Book, and it was recognized as the country's greenest automaker by the Union of Concerned Scientists for the fifth time in a row. If you're looking for a car with great mileage for its class and a bold new look, please visit Chapman Honda at 4600 East 22nd Street. You'll get the best ownership experience possible.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and there is a lot to think about today. We are doing a pre-recorded show today for Earth Month, Earth Day, on the 21st of April. Everybody's going to be too busy doing their Earth Day things to be in studio. The show is sponsored by the Fairfax Company. And please remember that I am live every Saturday at 12 at MrsGreensWorld.com, reminding you that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. So if you're out and about, you can pick me up on the phone, and I love that. And if you do have to miss, remember that all of these shows live on my website. I have a very high podcast followers, so spread the word that way. It's right there for your listening pleasure. And please don't forget to connect with me on Facebook and Twitter, because you can find out about all these neat people that are on the Mrs. Green's World show. Today, we interviewed Terry D., who is a regular from the Habitat for Humanity's Havas store. I encourage you to find them in your neighborhoods. They're called Restore in most other places. And we had an interview with Franklin Russell, director of Earth Day, and it's : Earth Day Network, and they're doing unbelievable things globally. They expect to have 1 million people participate in Earth Day activities on Sunday. And isn't that something to shout about? It's like, yes, I need some good news here. And they certainly brought it to us. And in studio with me, I'm thrilled to have Tana Kappel from the Nature Conservancy. And we're going to be talking about a lot of fun things. So thank you for being here.
Sure.
And being patient and listening while all that went on. So tell us a little bit, and again, I say this, I can't imagine that anybody never heard of the Nature Conservancy, but it's okay. If they didn't, now they're going to.
Yeah, the Nature Conservancy has been around for around 60 years. We're an international organization. Our mission is to conserve the lands and waters on which we all depend. And that sort of gets to the whole Earth Day idea. I was reviewing Gaylord Nelson and his role in Earth Day, and it really relates closely to the mission of the Nature Conservancy. But Gaylord Nelson, when he proclaimed Earth Day, had this incredible quote: "The wealth of the nation is its air, water, soil, forests, minerals, rivers, lakes, oceans, scenic beauty, wildlife habitats, and biodiversity." And really, that's all there is. That's the whole economy.
That's it.
That's it.
The whole enchilada, the whole green enchilada.
You bet.
And you know, when I'm not kidding, I just, so from my heart, a very, very long time ago, when Mr. and Mrs. Green started getting married, and we've been married 36 years, and, you know, we were both working, starting out, we joined the Nature Conservancy, and I remember it was about some land that was going to be absolutely threatened. And what the Nature Conservancy basically does is use private dollars to buy those lands so they can never be corrupted. I like that word. It's like never be tainted, never be altered. And they own its privately held land, so you don't ever have to worry about a land swap or whatever. And we did. We gave our, whether it was $15 a month pledge, having been in nonprofits, no pledge is ever too small. You know what I mean? So it was like we just did as much as we could and still continue to be active members. So
yes.
I really do know about it. I'm 61. I was just little when it started, but I've been aware of it for at least 40 years.
Yeah. And that happened in New York. That was the genesis of the Nature Conservancy, and protecting land through those kinds of private, purchase transactions was our model for many, many years. Now we have taken that model and expanded it because we realize that we can't buy all the land in the world that needs to be protected.
Yes.
We have to work with people. We have to work with corporations. We have to work with ranchers. We have to work with a lot of people to really influence the best uses of the lands and waters because, frankly, everybody knows those lands and waters are ecosystem services. We can't live without them. And so that's really the message we're trying to impart through our work.
I hope people are listening to that. It's part of what, like, are you really thinking about this? We can't live without them. And I know when I went to the Amazon and the rainforest and saw the devastation there, knowing that my air quality is impacted because we are really a sealed envelope.
Yes.
So our lives depend on it. And that's, you know, it gets me very excited about that. So that's the big 30,000 view feet of the, you know, from 30,000 feet of the interview of the Nature Conservancy. What in particular are you doing that's exciting for Earth Day? It's fun to talk about Earth Day.
Yes, it is. We, for the second year in a row, the Nature Conservancy is organizing picnics for the planet.
I want to ring the bell again. It's just like the Earth Day. It's a bell ringing kind of day. Picnics for the planet. There's no downside.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the Earth nourishes us, and that is the concept for Picnic for the Planet. There are people who produce our food, our water. Let's get outdoors and really celebrate what the Earth provides for us. And the simple way to do that is to have a picnic. We have about 1,100 picnics at last count throughout the world. 50 states and more than 30 countries are all having picnics for the planet. So it's growing from last year.
So what's all involved in a picnic for the planet?
It can be as little or as much as you want to make it. And if you go to nature.org/picnic, you can find out how you can have your own picnic. You can find out how to connect with others who are already having picnics. There are picnics in a lot of different places. Here in Arizona, the Arizona Science Center in Phoenix is having a picnic. And they are hoping to contribute to the new world record of picnics. We are trying to break a world record. I don't think it's ever been done before. So this is our attempt to try to get people really excited about coming out and joining Picnic for the Planet. So Arizona Science Center, they hope to have thousands. That should be a big contribution to the world record.
So Dana, we should like commit here right on the airwaves the heck with Phoenix. We're going to do one next year. We'll get the U of A involved. We'll get Mrs. Green's World involved. We'll bring a lot of people to that party.
You bet. I think we should.
Phoenix, we'll do it for Tucson. I love it. I mean, I can mobilize a lot of people that would get excited about this.
And heck, you can do this right now. You can do your own little picnic. You out there, wherever you are, you can have your own small picnic. You can invite your friends. You can do it. Just go and find out how you can be a part of this. It's
exciting. Can we go a little bit off the grid here because it's my show? Did you picnic with your, like when you were a little girl, did your families go on picnics?
Oh, sure.
We went on so many picnics and we loved it. Loved it. And one thing that matters to me in this world, like my mom was a stay-at-home mom. When we then did it as a couple with our kids, the joy was that my kids had mom and dad all to themselves, not cleaning, doing the weekend, you know, go to the dry cleaner, go to the grocery store, on and on. We did stuff as a family, and our kids loved it. We did it with my brother and his family. We have more happy, laughing memories of, you know, getting lost on back roads, and it really doesn't take much. Pack a lunch and get in the car and go somewhere.
I think it harkens to an earlier time that we could all get outdoors as a family. And, you know, that's one thing that we are really trying to encourage is more kids to get out of doors. We have a lot of kids these days who spend a lot of time indoors and don't get out into the countryside.
Video games, TV, internet.
It's called videophilia is the term for it. And we really, Richard Louv wrote a book called Last Child in the Woods. Excellent book, but it really speaks to the value that research has shown that if you get outside, you are happier, healthier, less stressed, and parents take note of this, your kids will be smarter. There's something about being out and connecting out of doors that really helps clear your mind, and research backs this up.
And when you go out in nature with kids, like I have grandchildren now, there's no entertaining needed. My grandson and granddaughter, we're out there. And sticks become things and forts become things. And the hiking and looking for birds, and they're quiet. And it's just one of our favorite places to take our kids was the place down by Patagonia, the bird sanctuary.
Ramsey Canyon.
Yeah. We've gone there. And then there's the other one. What's the one in
Patagonia?
Patagonia, where you go and look for that coppery-tailed trogon, which I've never gotten to see yet, but we go back. And this is what I think is funny. We're, you know, the old people now, only in age, but not in acting. When I'm stressed to the max, usually because of some technological failure, I just look at Mr. Green and I say, we got to get out of here. And guess where we head? We head to someplace green. We head to Cochise Stronghold, or we head down to the Nature Conservancy at Ramsey Canyon, and it heals you.
It does.
It's like detoxification instead of taking a pill.
Can I tell you where we spent our picnic for the planet last year?
We love it.
My husband and daughter and a friend of ours were in Aravaipa Canyon.
Awesome.
That is a preserve. Nature Conservancy owns either end of the canyon, and the BLM manages the wilderness with which the creek in the canyon goes through. We were sitting in the middle of the canyon having our picnic and observing Earth Day last year.
That's a great memory forever. And you know, if there's water involved ever, like my grandkids, get your shoes off and walking down the streams. I mean, talk about laughter. And I'm going to tell some story on air that I can't get in trouble for now. But one of the things that my husband would do and my brother is they'd offer the kids money if they could touch a cow. I'm sure that's not very sustainable, but watching the kids try to catch a cow, which you can't. Well, then one of my best friends, her daughter went up. And she went up and we said, Amy, we'll give you $50 if you can touch the cow. And they start running. We don't terrorize them. And she went up and the cow came up and like licked her hand. We called her the cow whisperer. But those are stories that everybody's sitting there saying, you've got to be kidding me. But out in nature, creating good memories.
I have to tell you that I grew up on a ranch in northeastern Montana.
So is it okay what we did to the cow?
Oh, yeah. Cows are used to being touched.
It's like, okay, I hope we didn't traumatize some little calf.
Yeah. But, you know, I spent my early formative years on the back of a horse with my dad, who was a cowboy. And, you know, I'd spend time down at the creek. I'd spend time looking for turtles and fish, and I got to spend time laying on the ground looking up at the clouds overhead.
Big sky.
Big sky. And, you know, I think about those experiences, and I think about, you know, my daughter today and some kids today that grow up in cities, and it's just such a different experience.
Well, in cities, in Tucson, in New Jersey, in New York City, there are parks.
There
so
are.
You do the best with what you have, and if you are fortunate enough to be able to take a drive, in New York City, you can go to upstate New York within an hour. It's not like a four-day trip. The other thing is, and I really hope people are listening to this part of it, when you're busy and you're raising a family and in these challenging economic times, you have to eat. You always eat lunch. So why not take a lunch and get involved in this? And I saw on your website, there's actually a whole like PDF on what you can do to register, to have a picnic, so that the $1 billion, how many picnics do we have to bake to break the world record?
You know, I don't know that a world record has been really set.
So let's do it. We'll do it by next year.
Yeah, exactly. We'll set the bar this year and then
we'll set the bar.
Whole hog next year.
And I got news for you. There's people that are listening that'll remind me, like on my team, Kelly King, and there's a woman named Kristen Cullany that works for the Girl Scouts. And if I put it out there, we'll be getting it organized for the next year. Wouldn't that be just so much fun and great for Tucson? And you know Terry D's going to participate.
You bet.
He said, why weren't you there yesterday? And I said, I'm not twins, you know, I can't be at everything. So want to talk a little bit about the Lorax Project, because I really, I can't tell you how many people have told me to go see the Lorax movie. I have not done that yet. So I'm very intrigued with what you have to share with me about the Nature Conservancy and partnering with this.
Well, the Lorax Speaks, that's a classic. Dr. Zeus.
Right, right.
And just this morning, I was looking at some of the trailers of it. And the Lorax is the guardian of the forest. That's who he is. He is. And in the movie, Danny DeVito plays the Lorax. It's very well done. It's very clever. And it really speaks to how we need to sustainably manage our forests. The Nature Conservancy is working with Universal Studios on a fundraising effort to plant 1 billion trees.
A billion trees. All I want to do is ring the bell today. I was so ready for good news. Like, let's hear it for 1 billion trees. We need to do that.
Yeah. The Plant 1 billion trees effort is to try to save critical habitat, critical forested areas in the Amazon. So you can go online and search for Plant 1 billion trees at the nature.org site, and that will show you where we are working in the Amazon and how you can contribute to that.
And I mentioned this earlier, but when I went to the Amazon, it sounds a little crazy, but the devastation you see, and it looks like big graveyards, and then it rains, and then you see the erosion of soil. Just the rain is so intense when it rains there. So I always thought of the empty spaces, but when I actually got to see it rain, we really need to reforest those trees.
We do.
It's really... It matters to all of us.
We are down to 7% of the original rainforest in the Amazon basin. We've got to do a whole lot more to both protect that resource and to replant. Because our forests, I mean, they're so critical in a time of climate change. Our forests act as carbon sponges. They're like sponges on the earth that filter our water, that clean our air. So what happens in the Amazon affects the whole earth.
It does. And I just, you know, on my journey as Mrs. Green, you go down the rabbit hole and you realize we are a sealed envelope. That's the best way I can say it. They talk about that in building with green building councils, how your house is a sealed envelope. So be careful what you're putting in it. And then I took it. Yeah, well, guess what, guys? We are a sealed envelope. So what exactly is the project, the Lorax Project? I just decided that maybe what Mr. Green and I will do for Earth Week is go see the movie.
Absolutely. Go see the movie and then go check out Lorax at nature.org. And there are steps there for ways you can contribute to help plant a billion trees.
And I love that they're partnering with Hollywood, because the stars have to get on board. Last night, I put a Facebook post up this morning, and I said that I watched E.T. Entertainment Tonight, because it kept flashing on that they were going to be talking about green. What are celebrities that are doing green? So I watched it. And sadly, the number one thing that they all said, oh, I recycle. Oh, I recycle everything. Oh, I recycle everything. Well, the first R is reduce. So we've got to remember that part too. Okay, we're going to take a short break. You will not want to move. You'll want to stay here and listen more from Tana Kappel from the Nature Conservancy and what else she's got to share with us. Please stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And certainly today we're giving you a lot to think about. Earlier in the show, we had our buddy Terry D from the Habitat for Humanity's Habistore. We had a great interview with Franklin Russell, director of Earth Day, Earth Day Network. And now we are interviewing and having a great time with Tana Kappel from the Nature Conservancy here in Tucson. It's a pre-recorded show because all of us will be out doing Earth Day activities when the show is actually aired. Please remember that I am here live every Saturday at noon, or pre-recorded and sounds like live, and follow me on Facebook and Twitter so that you can stay a part of Mrs. Green's World, where I talk about sustainability on a global, national, and local scale. So thank you, Tana. This has been fun, and we're gonna fly right, keep going. So can we switch from there? I don't want people to forget about the picnic, and to try to go to the website nature.org/picnic and to become involved in that, because we want to break a record, and we're having a big one next year in Tucson. I'm just going to keep saying that so we get everybody on board. And then the Lorax Project, it's one thing people can do to help plant a billion trees, and it doesn't cost $1,000. That's the thing. It's a little step that you can do to feel like you're part of the global effort to a healthier planet. And then let's talk about forestry issues. I think that you mentioned a very startling statistic, about 7% left
in the
rainforest Amazon region, which is like, really, that's just not a great number.
And I think when I say 7%, that's the native. You know, there have been efforts to restore and replenish.
Some very hopeful, positive efforts. So yeah. That's people are starting to pay attention to that.
You bet. We do have forestry issues, though, that really are quite urgent in the United States. Last year, we had some of the most huge fires in the desert Southwest.
Devastating.
They were devastating for rural communities. The largest fire, the Wallow Fire, charred 500,000 acres, the largest fire in Arizona history.
And you know, I mentioned off air, it charred. We have charred remains on our dream cabin. It's still a grieving process for our family. It was a very violent, devastating fire, and it ravaged the earth.
Yeah. What we've determined we need to do, and we, you know, the Nature Conservancy obviously can't do this alone. We're working with a number of partners on a variety of forest health projects. We're working to implement the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program, which is actually a federally funded program to bring dollars to local communities to restore forest health. And when I say restore forest health, the forests have become overgrown because of the last century. We have put out all natural fires. And so we've got a lot of trees and shrubs that are just overgrowing. They're growing out of control in our forests. And so what happens when we've got drought and wildfire during fire season is that it's tinder for huge fires
all over the ground. It's literally like putting a match in a can of kerosene, because
exactly.
All the ground stuff is there, and I really can't believe how devastating it can be and how quickly.
Yeah. So what we need to do is go in there and mechanically thin our forests. And we are working, I'll cite an example of a project that I think really is working, and that is a model for other forest restoration projects. It happens to be in the White Mountains, the White Mountain Stewardship Project. And the fire, the Wallow Fire of last summer, could have been a lot more devastating had we not done some of the thinning around some of the communities like Alpine.
And they were not as devastated.
They were not as devastated, and we've talked to people there who say, you know, this town would have gone up in flames, but because we did some of the thinning around that community, it saved the community. And we are trying to work and take that model and put it into four other forests in Arizona, four other national forests. We're calling it the Four Forest Restoration Initiative. And with that program, we're working to thin a million acres in the next 10 years to try to prevent, you know, devastating wildfires, to improve wildlife habitat. We're trying to do it in a way that is ecologically sound.
Right.
So you do clumps and groups of trees. You don't just come in and cut down all the trees. You do it in a very well-managed
effort.
There's
a very systematic way.
Exactly.
And the experts really know how to do it. You can see when a forest has been thinned. It looks healthier.
Yeah, it does. The other way that makes this doable, because these efforts are very costly, and we don't think the taxpayers should be faced with the whole cost of doing this. There is a way to involve local communities in these efforts, and we did so in the White Mountain Stewardship Program by providing a 10-year-long contract with fire or with woodcutters and involving the community. We were able to provide or to produce products. The woodcutters were able to take those locally thinned trees and take them to a local community in the White Mountains, where they were turned into wood pellets for fire stoves. And that is economically beneficial
yes.
for the local community.
Yes, yes.
So I think this is the model that the Nature Conservancy is really trying to work towards. You know,
it's
the economy.
It sounds trite, but it's a sustainable model.
The only way you can sustain these kinds of environmental efforts is to provide the economic impetus that really helps sustain them. So it's not like we're out there trying to protect the environment from people. This is really about a model for the environment that is for people, that involves people in the process.
And, you know, you and I were talking earlier about how important it is to go on a picnic. Well, in those areas, it's all connected. When you go up there, first of all, that's their economic driver, is people wanting to get out in nature. So if the habitat is destroyed, people don't come, people lose jobs, it becomes a ghost town. So there's so many integral parts that are integrated in this. It's not the silos where you do this and you do that. I mean, the people up there depend on ski season and the fall to some extent and summer recreation.
You bet.
Because it's 110 here and it's 82 up there.
Exactly.
So it really is to create the sustainable community that's going to be there when those city dwellers like me want to go up and get a break from the heat.
Yes.
And bring our families and be present in nature.
Yes.
And it's so wildlife rich up there. The last time we went up, we saw wild turkeys and we saw elk and we saw deer and we saw rabbits. I mean, it's just, there's something about that connection that helps you live more consciously.
Yes.
Okay, so that's really amazing. And I love the expansion to the public-private partnership and the people living there have an investment in it.
Yep.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, can we just touch a little bit about on it's really up to you, but to me, the big picture of the Nature Conservancy, talk about growing from just purchasing land to now being involved in so many things that I would call more land management, more public-private partnerships. I believe that you are all still on the ground in the Gulf area, because I had the Gulf Monitoring Consortium on here a couple of months ago. And they talked about the continuing devastation, unfortunately, that it's a ripple effect and everything isn't cleaned up and everybody didn't go home and it's all happily ever after. There are still, you know, things going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We're still working on the ground in the Gulf. But even just to jump ahead, it's not just about fixing what we've already...
Right.
What we've already... impacted. It's about being proactive and working with many different groups to try to incorporate sustainability into our regular practices. So working with companies, with corporations. One example we just wrote about in our magazine, which I'm the editor of for Arizona, called Field Notes. We just wrote an article about the Bill Williams River. We've worked with the Fish and Wildlife
Service.
Which
I have never heard of, and I'm writing it down.
Yeah. Bill Williams River is in west central Arizona. It's a tributary of the Colorado River. It used to be, in the 1960s, it was a very healthy stream with lots of wildlife and the water flowed. Then we built the Alamo Dam, mainly for flood control and then also for recreation purposes. Now there's Alamo State Park there, which is enjoyed by a lot of people for recreation, fishing, boating, etc. But what happened with the dam was we didn't have regular flooding cycles. That really impacted the fish and wildlife. It ruined the cottonwood willow forest along the whole length of the stream. So by working with the Army Corps of Engineers,
okay,
and a collaborative group of people, a whole group of people, the Bill Williams Steering Committee was able to incorporate incorporate methods of releasing waters from the dam that mimicked natural flood cycles that helped restore the cottonwood willow forest.
The magic of engineering.
And it is, and it's all science-based. And I bring this up because that model is being used other places in the Southwest where we have dams, but where we really need to get back to that natural flood cycle to keep those streams healthy for people and nature. That model is being looked at in China.
Unbelievable.
There's nothing like
a cottonwood. I'm sorry. They are some of the most magnificent trees. When you come across a stand of cottonwoods, you just want to pull your car off the road and have a picnic.
Exactly.
That's amazing. That's great to share with us.
So the Yangtze River in China, where they have all those dams, the flood control engineers there are looking at this model as a way to, you know, mimic some natural flooding cycles.
So it comes up to me, like, how do they even know that that's going on? Are the scientists looking for it? How did someone in China find out what you were doing at the Bill Williams River in the middle of Arizona?
Because we have a program, an ongoing program in China.
Okay.
And so we were able to bring
green dots.
Yep, we were able to bring some of our experts, Andrew Hautzinger from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who the Nature Conservancy just gave a big award this year because of his role in the Bill Williams, went to China to meet with our people and some of the engineers there on the dam.
I love it. I love it. Now, I would love to talk about this before we run out of time, which it will fly. What are you doing, and this is a constant challenge to me, to involve the next generation, the younger generation, because they get information differently. And you know how they get information. I do, because they're never away from their phones. It's on the phone, and it's on the internet, and it's Twitter, and it's Facebook. Every young person I know has a Twitter account.
Yes, they do.
And it's like, why? Yeah. They tweet to each other, and they tweet information. So how does the Nature Conservancy plan to move into the 21st century to connect the next generation?
Well, a number of fronts, and we are really starting to think through how we can do that more effectively by doing some research in that whole area and to figure out.
It's really important.
It is very important because our research shows that if you are involved in the out-of-doors as a young person, you're going to be more connected to conservation when you're older.
Right.
And we've got to start now. So, for example, I'll give you an Arizona example. We're working with the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension Project WET.
Love them. Love the Cooperative Extension. Okay, Project WET.
Yes. And Project WET is all about teaching kids about water and getting them out on the ground. They have water festivals that different schools can participate in. And we, for example, in the Phoenix area this year, and I was just out there 2 weeks ago at the Hassayampa River Preserve, 3 busloads of kids from Scottsdale schools, middle schools, came out to Hassayampa and did all kinds of water investigation things on the Hassayampa River. Very cool. So they were studying animal tracks. They were looking at water flow. They were measuring the cleanliness of the water, you know, filtering it, doing all kinds of things. And they are going to be presenting the results of their citizen science research. What a way to connect. They're going to be presenting their results at the Phoenix College May 15th and 16th. It's going to be like a research symposium.
What age
where these
kids?
These are middle school kids, sixth graders.
Awesome.
So getting them involved early and getting them to really connect with the water. The other thing they're doing as part of Project WET is measuring water flow that comes out of taps. And so they measure how much water is coming out of the taps. They're using aerators to put on the taps to demonstrate that there is a way to reduce water use. And so what we would like to do, the Nature Conservancy in Arizona, is thinking about taking this project to scale. We're talking, and very preliminarily, but I want to mention this, wild about water. We want to get as many groups as we can interested in wild about water, getting kids involved, getting their parents, getting teachers involved, but also getting businesses involved. Wouldn't it be great if some of these kids could take these aerators to area businesses, you know, show how they could reduce their water use? The business, it would be win-win for businesses because they could then show that they're working to help educate our kids about
water. And they're saving
money on water. And saving money.
So it's a win-win-win. I call it the green trifecta.
Yeah, you
bet. I'm wild about water. If people ask me, what do I think the number one thing to do? I had Andy Revkin on my show a couple of weeks ago who writes a big blog, .earth, for the New York Times. And his answer was so great. And it was a reminder to me. First of all, think and be conscious, which is getting all those people out. And then the number one, that would be like 1A, is really understand that water is our most precious resource. It's the only thing we cannot live without. So focusing on that and taking that to heart, to me, is absolutely essential for everything. High efficiency toilets, put a brick in your toilet if you can't. Turn the water off. Who would leave their water on while they were brushing their teeth? I get nuts about it. So we'll be hearing more about Wild About Water.
That
would be absolutely and positively another wonderful thing for us to help spread the word about. Do you have a lot? I know the answer to this, so I'm just asking you for our listeners, a lot of programs in Tucson that involve kids for rainwater harvesting. I mean, the beat goes on. How do they find you? Let's do that before we're out of time.
nature.org/Arizona. On our homepage, there's a rainwater harvesting tour that kids can sign up for.
And find out all about the Nature Conservancy. That's what I want to do. Next week, everybody, Winona Howder, who's the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org, will be my guest. You will not want to miss her. She's going to be talking a lot about fracking. Happy Earth Day. Make it a great green week. And thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's World, mrsgreensworld.com.